RadioInfluence.com.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Dark to Light podcast with
Declassify Now
and Beans.
No, it's, he has nothing left to lose, Tracy. I'm jumping into this cold. I want to hit the ground running and say he has nothing to lose.
No, he doesn't.
Not a career politician. Whenever this ride ends, whether it's in 2 or 6 years, it's over. He's just drop it.
Like it's hot.
Like it's hot.
Because it is hot. It is hot.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah. This week has been holy crap. Moly, it's been crazy.
Indeed, it has been. I'm getting excited, but I'm gearing up. I'm ready.
Well, we have a lot of stuff to talk about today. We're gonna try and cram it all into one fantastic hour for you people with Declassify Now, my co-host. And so let's start. Let's start with yesterday and Cohen. We'll start there. And my squeaky chair is still here. So we'll start with Cohen. Like. When you saw that, just from my perspective, what was your first thought when you saw the news headlines that he had pleaded guilty to perjury?
I said, doofy-faced Cohen is getting ready for Act 3 of the of what will surely be a small shit stain on American history that he's going to leave behind, because this is so ridiculous. Because we go back a couple of months. 2018 has been a great year for Cohen, hasn't it? He go back a couple of months and he's pleading guilty to non-existent campaign finance crimes, and so that goes on and it just disappears after a little while. And then of course you have this whole thing with Lanny Davis where they use themselves as first and secondary sources for another story that goes away and CNN embarrasses itself for over nothing. And now I look at this, I'm like, all right. I'm going to give this story 5 minutes of my time, because if it seems important to everybody else, it's probably going to go away in 72 hours. And I just don't know what to it's so disinteresting to me that a private citizen, Donald Trump, up until June of 2016 was still looking at prospective real estate development deals around the world. He's got resort. I went over it last night. All the places, the countries he has resorts, hotels, and golf courses on. I'm like, what are we even talking about here?
You know, there's a couple points to that. You're absolutely right. It was, I mean, nothing about this was untoward on Trump's part. But let's decompartmentalize a little bit. First of all, when they were writing the dossier, and Glenn Simpson said in his testimony as such, they went all over the world trying to find something on Trump, right? They looked everywhere he had business dealings and were coming up empty. So then they said, there's nothing in Russia. That's where we should focus. That was what Glenn Simpson testified before Congress about, literally. So basically, the reason why this is so interesting to me, and I think why the left is freaking out about it, isn't because necessarily there was a, or maybe that I'm wrong, but isn't because there was a deal someplace in Russia or a pending deal or a letter of intent signed. I think the more important angle of the story, as we talked about yesterday offline, is the Felix Sater connection, because it's all about Felix Sater. I'm sorry, it is. And Felix Sater.
Which, by the way, thank you for all the work you've done on profiling this man, because he's probably flying under the radar of so many people because there's such bigger names involved in this crazy saga. But you've really profiled him well, and now finally it's starting to make a little bit more sense as to his role in this story.
I'm wondering, and you're welcome. I picked up on this back in March, and I'm wondering why it wasn't made out to be a bigger deal than it is. And I think the reason is he's still an active asset. And I think that that's why, like a helper, they're trying to keep this portion of him under wraps, why the media doesn't talk about him very much anymore, etc. But He goes deeper than just Donald Trump. And I don't want to go into a big, huge, you know, analytical thing about Felix Sater. But basically, he was a criminal. He was a childhood friend of Michael Cohen. He was brought into the Trump sphere by Michael Cohen. He was the developer in a company. He was the owner of a company called Bayrock that was a real estate development firm. They never did any deals with Donald Trump ever. None of them ever worked out. As a matter of fact, years prior, Trump basically closed the door in his face and said, sorry, dude, you're a criminal. Talk to you later. He worked very closely with the U.S. government for over a decade in counterintelligence and you know, basically like, I mean, Osama bin Laden level collaboration with the government. Very chummy with none other than Attorney General Loretta Lynch. And one thing that I don't think that I'm making a big enough deal about was that Sater and Cohen, knowing each other for their entire lives, obviously Cohen had to have some idea what was going on. He could have been working with him. The overt nature of the email that Cohen sent, Sater sent to Cohen about
laughable. Email is laughable.
Seriously, it basically says, "I'm going to get Putin to get Trump elected." Like, legit.
We read the excerpt on the air last night, and we're sitting there and we're laughing as this thing is coming out.
Well, that, I mean, and that's not it, though. And this is what I don't think I'm being a good steward of information on. A couple weeks ago, for some odd reason, I stumbled across a fact about Felix Sater that I'd forgotten. He didn't only do all of those things and work with Cohen on this deal in Russia trying to get it done. He was also the author of a policy paper for an advocacy of the Ukraine and the change in the GOP platform issues and all that, that was given to Michael Cohen and hand-delivered to none other than one General Flynn.
Hmm.
So Felix Sater authors this paper, gives it to Michael Cohen, who delivers it to General Flynn, and then a week later, the shenanigans go crazy with Flynn, and he steps down. So that's a little piece that people are overlooking. It was almost as though they were trying to use Sater to then also ensnare General Flynn. Because
everything going out there. You look at all the known assets right now, all the pieces that are on the board between Sater and it's not even so much witting or people who are wittingly working. It's just that known assets are out there and people and obviously it seems as if there is a greater power at play here that is trying to work on how everybody can be used in a way that can coalesce and can create a very workable narrative. For example, the Carter Page. I mean, he was a known asset, a friendly asset of the FBI as of, you know, March of 2016. It would make sense as to how they know that they can use that name. Yep. and turn it into something that can look suspicious. So it seems like in so many multiple things, and as I made the joke two nights ago, here we have George Papadopoulos, who, you know, you can go one way or another with his intentions, but it is without a doubt that this man was just pretty much passed around from intelligent asset to intelligent intelligence asset, like a joint at a Phil Lesh concert.
we're gonna get into Papadopoulos because there's something else. We'll get into him in a second. I mean, and you're right on all of this. I mean, the number of these, you know, basically undercover intelligence guys plastered inside the Trump campaign is insane and loosely so in some cases. But do you want to know why I think Cohen was indicted and what it may mean, why he took that plea? Because this didn't pop into my head until a little bit after. But about, 5 days ago, Donald Trump provided his written answers to Mueller. It came out. He was asked about this building. I'm saying that he told the truth about the timeline. And Mueller took his testimony of the president, looked at it and said, this is credible, and went back to Michael Cohen's testimony and then threw Michael Cohen and said, you lied to us. You perjured yourself in front of Congress and you perjured yourself in our investigation. So, you know, based off of what the president is saying and providing, you lied. And I think he got this knock because of Donald Trump, which would be just ultimate irony, in my opinion.
That would be irony.
And you got to look at how they're handling these different people. Like, I feel like some of the people, like, for example, Papadopoulos, Donald Trump, like, crapped all over him and said basically, like, he's arrested because of us. We provided. Sarah Sanders literally came out and said, we're the ones who gave all this information to Mueller's special counsel. That's why Papadopoulos got arrested. They took credit for it. That tells you a lot. And what it tells me in Papadopoulos' case is that as he kept on talking, and listen, I get crap for this, Frank, for not just going along with the fact that he was framed, because the glaring holes in some of the things that he has talked about are just too much for me to overlook. Like, maybe there are perfectly reasonable explanations for this stuff. Who knows?
Well, give me an example of one of the holes.
One of the holes. How, you know, he talks about how he ended up at the London Center, and he later comes to find out that every single person working there is some sort of intelligence asset or member. But he's the only one who isn't. You know what I mean? Like, who brought him there? How did he get that job? Who asked him? What, you know, he left the Carson campaign and then starts working at the London Center and then goes to the Trump campaign. You know what I mean?
Yep. No, hey, that's why I always say, number one, I know I am perfectly fine with maybe never understanding or knowing all the details. But all you need to know is that regardless of whether or not he was a plant or a patsy, or he was a plant who turned into a patsy and is now trying to fight back and save his skin and go get back at the people who betrayed him and whatever kind of initial deal he was. It doesn't even matter what the nature of his existence in this plot even is. He is a linchpin that disproves the legitimacy of the plot.
Yeah, would it matter to you if he was involved with Israeli intelligence?
Would it matter? I mean, it wouldn't be surprising. I mean, what are we seeing right now? That you're talking about compartmentalization. This isn't even relegated to just American intelligence. This isn't an international scheme that is developing before our eyes. I would not be surprised if every intelligence agency on Earth is involved at this point.
Well,
that's why I care about the declassification and people getting their reputations burned.
No, agree. So right before he leaves, he says and goes to jail and, you know, packs it in for a couple weeks. He says, I met with Shai, and I'm going to say his name, Arbel, in Israel. And that's one of the people that was responsible for giving me the $10,000. And that's another one of my questions before we get into the details of this is, why did he meet with these people in the United States and then later on decide to travel all the way over to Israel to meet with them again and not tell us what this business deal he was being brought over there for was? He just glosses over that like it's no big deal. So long story short, he goes over and meets with Shai, and I say, who is this man? Want to hear some info?
Please.
Shai Arbel is the co-founder and co-CEO of a company called Terrigence. It is basically a human intelligence company that gathers up all kinds of intel on all kinds of different people for counterterrorism and all kinds of different stuff. They were actually in some hot water a couple of years ago because they were using Facebook photos to make a huge database to be able to cross-reference people's pictures. And it was coming out right when the Cambridge Analytica stuff started coming out. They looped in Terrigence with them. They're a competitor of CrowdStrike. Interesting. Prior to joining Terrigence, Mr. Arbel served as head of a linguistics and technical translation team in one of the most prestigious units of the Israeli Defense Intelligence in the IDF. Following his service, he joined the Israeli Security Agency, taking a position as an analyst. He worked very closely with a certain three-letter agency in the United States, the NSA.
Oh, we got problems.
So now there's a lot more there. They're all over the WikiLeaks emails in terms of Stratfor and stuff like that, global intelligence files. And so I've been digging in here trying to really pinpoint where these good guys are bad guys, and I can't. All the stuff I've read on them, it appears as though they had noble intentions. But anything, and you know, maybe that's why the relationship between Israel and the United States right now is so damn strong. Maybe Israel was one country that was doing their best to stop all this nonsense or at least let people know. I have a hard time believing that. I don't know enough about how that stuff works geopolitically to make a conclusion. But why is George Papadopoulos, the nobody, right, meeting the 34-year-old, meeting with these people in Israel after he's already learned that he had a FISA warrant on him?
I don't know. And I feel like trying to answer that question, unless there is something that I'm overlooking to explain why answering the need to answer that question is paramount to understanding the overall thing here, because
it makes a difference, because then we can have some idea of who Peter Strzok and Lisa Page were referring to when they said our guy.
Yeah, I perhaps, but even if we did get some confirmation on that, it would almost be like playing a game of guess who, where you only get to knock down one of maybe like 10 faces who could have been their guy. They have so many guys and gals out there working for them that it's getting a little dizzying.
It matters to me because I need to understand, and I think a lot of you know I get what you're saying. You're 100% right in the grand scheme of things. If from like 40,000 feet, exactly right with what you said about Papadopoulos. And people are getting sick of hearing his name, to be quite honest. And I get it. I won't let it go. And for me, I need to understand the tapestry here in the basket weave. I need to. I need to know who was involved, who the players were, and why. It's just like this yearning that I have.
Well, hey, that's your strong – that is your – that's your gig right there. I mean, this is the type of work that you do. You know, I'm a little bit more of a 30 and 40,000 feet guy. So that's just the playoff that we have here. So I completely understand why you need to get everything done and index this stuff. It all needs to be indexed. But
yeah,
damn.
Because, you know, everybody's connected to everyone. So, like, when things come up later, you can go back and say, oh, my gosh, this is the same guy that – and because, you know, it's giving you kind of like we're – you know, I always say I'm doing this open source, so all I have is what's available in the public sphere. That's all I have. So I keep this catalog of, like, very detailed research on everybody so that I know, like, later on. Like, I never would have been able to know that Manafort and Stone work with Podesta, you know? Or that Manafort was really, really close with McCain, or that Gates was also working for, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And one other thing on Papadopoulos. Somebody sent a letter to Schiff. Did you see that?
No.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. So this came up the other day, too. And I think it's someplace in here in this message with my compadres in a secret messaging app. There was a letter sent to Schiff from an anonymous person who wished to remain anonymous that didn't want the letter leaked to the media or anything like that, that basically said Papadopoulos was talking to me, and I was there, about this big deal in Russia that was going to make him rich, and it directly, you know, contradicts what you're saying or what he's saying now, and I thought that you guys should know. And it was just leaked the other day after he went to jail. And I want to read it, but I can't find it. So I'm going to keep looking while we chat here.
Okay. It's really something. It's really something to see what's happening here. And I put this out just a little bit before, too, with this declassification and how it's kind of being used as a carrot to try to get, well, if Democrats want to behave, I won't release this damning stuff. That's ridiculous right there, because if you really have the destructive, devastating evidence of criminality, why the hell on earth are you trying to use that as a political cudgel to get criminals to go along with you? Get them out. I mean, drop it. That means it's so ridiculous how that can even be used as a I don't know. It's a really ridiculous carrot. And then, of course, to retweet that meme of all those people behind bars. Now it's just like it's shit or get off the pot time. You can't do that stuff and not back it up with action. That's in a way like drawing a red line in Syria and then not doing anything.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. I don't like that tool. That sort of, you know, I don't like it. Like, we're on the same page with that too. This is not a game. This is not a political. This is the country at stake here. This is justice, and I can't go by that. So what was I going to say? There's so much here. So we also had, let's go through a little list of things we're going to talk about as we move on. We had the Papadopoulos thing. I'm going to read to you guys in a second. We had the whole Manafort thing come out, where he supposedly lied, and then whatever, they can't use him anymore. So there's a hearing going on right now. We also had Corey Lewandowski's book come out. Did you hear about that?
Mm-hmm.
So the Daily Mail does it. The Daily Mail releases an article about the book, which I purchased because I have to read this. And they basically have the tape of Donald Trump being interviewed, which was obviously leaked to them by Lewandowski, who I find it very interesting is still meeting with the president. It kind of like blows to smithereens the Roger Stone angle that he was persona non grata, right? Mm-hmm. Roger Stone was pretty much single-handedly responsible for removing Lewandowski from the Donald Trump campaign, not because he said, you better fire this guy, but because he did this whole media blitz where he planted stories in the media to make him look like crap. And then Donald Trump was kind of forced to take in Manafort and let go Lewandowski. And that's where I'll stop with that. I'm not going to go crazy on that angle. But the interview in and of itself was interesting to me. I'm doing a lot of talking today, Frank.
Well, I'm listening.
Okay. I don't want to bore anyone with my voice. But it's just, there's so much analytically like to look at. So they release the interview, and they in it, they talk about, like, you know, what does he think would have happened, Donald Trump, if it was the shoe was on the other foot and anyone on his side of the aisle or him himself did any of the things that these people did to him. And he said, you know, it'd be treason. You'd be in jail for 100 years. Easy. And then they say, oh, wait, we didn't get to talk about Clinton. And basically Donald Trump just says, yeah, can you believe that? And then they move on. I just don't believe that that was the extent of the communication on Clinton.
No, it can't be. It can't be. And that sent me off on such a trail of thought on either Tuesday or Wednesday night. It was really something I had to follow because it brought up all these different memories over the last couple of years as far as who could have known. First of all, just the idea that everybody in the executive branch, all the administrators, all the directors and assistant directors and deputy assistant directors, everybody knew something. Everybody played a role in something. But President Obama knew nothing. He was just too busy. He was too busy handling his own business. He didn't know anything about anything, wasn't involved at all. And then to see this one redacted name and everybody's saying that's definitely Obama, I said, listen, that's not even anything I would be surprised about. That's just common sense. Of course he knew what was going on. But then it just made me think about the ridiculous last-minute letter that Susan Rice wrote to herself about how her boss, Obama, wanted everybody to play this by the books, as if at that time in January of 2017, it was all being played by the books. They had already had a FISA warrant granted and approved for Carter Page based on this unverified dossier that he wants to play everything by the books. This got me through such a crazy train of thought of all the things that were going on around there. And to hear this coming out, the only thing that gets me is this. I would not be fair. It would not be fair of me to say, oh, well, this Lewandowski book is going to be devastating, when they do the same thing with the Woodward book, with the Wolf book, with everything else. It's going to be if it's in a book, well, that's not an indictment. That's not the filing of charges. It's a damn book, you know. So it's one thing to talk about it, and everybody has something to discuss over the dinner table at Christmas time, and who thinks who did what and whatever. It's not. Where's the resolution? I don't care about people's books, you know. Where's the resolution? Nobody's going to be charged because of what a private citizen wrote in a book.
No, you're right. But at least we get a little bit of a window inside the administration and we know it's valid, right?
Yeah, maybe that puts a little bit of pressure on people who have the power to act. I don't know. But you know, it's this book nonsense. Everybody's writing books. I want to see indictments.
I want to see indictments too. I'm done with books myself, but it's still interesting.
Okay.
It's still interesting because you know that they met with him during the Kavanaugh debacle and they sat there and recorded him and he was okay with it and then they let him release it.
Mm.
I mean, to me, that says something, right?
Well, listen, there is more than enough evidence out there that shows that we're being prepared for something. There's more than enough evidence out there that shows that the president and people around him are preparing us for something. There's more than enough evidence from the people on the other side of the spectrum that are preparing us for something, because look at all of the big deals, the mountains they're making out of molehills. Look at all of the old stories, like with Ivanka and her emails. They're trying to soften the blow of what Hillary was doing. There are so many pieces of evidence and breadcrumbs out there that can tell the public that both sides are trying to spin and prepare for a major phase of action that is on its way. So that in my frustration about books and indictments or lack of indictments, that is not me saying that I believe that we are in the sticks with no hope, because everybody seems like they're trying to get out ahead of a big story. You know, so I just want to put that on the record.
I agree with you. I'm agreeing with you a lot today, because there are a lot of signs and symptoms around that this is getting heated, especially this one today. Did you see this article from the Daily Caller that says the FBI raided the home of a whistleblower on the Clinton Foundation?
Someone just tagged me on that on Twitter. I haven't read into it first. It's a gateway pundit.
Oh, OK. Well, so the Daily Caller came out with the story originally. And I got to be honest, it's a little concerning to me. First of all, it's complicated because the Daily Caller uses the whistleblower's name in the article. That gives me a little bit of pause. I don't know what the benefit of that would be.
I don't know anything about it yet, so this is the first I'm hearing of anything.
All right, so let me read a little bit of it to you then. I'll just read the bullet points. Ready?
Yep.
The FBI raided the home of a whistleblower who was in possession of documents regarding the Clinton Foundation and Uranium One, according to the whistleblower's lawyer, Michael Sakaris. The whistleblower, Dennis Nathan Kane, had turned the documents over to the Department of Justice's Inspector General and both the House and Senate Intelligence Committees, according to the lawyer. The FBI rummaged through Kane's home for 6 hours, even after the whistleblower handed over the documents, according to his attorney. The Justice Department's Inspector General was informed the documents show that federal officials failed to investigate potential criminal activity regarding former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, the Clinton Foundation, and Rosatom, the Russian company that purchased Uranium One. The delivered documents also show that then FBI Director Robert Mueller failed to investigate allegations of criminal misconduct pertaining to Rosatom and to other Russian government entities attached to Uranium One. The Bureau raided my client to seize what he legally gave Congress about the Clinton Foundation and Uranium One, noting that he considered the FBI's raid to be an outrageous disregard of whistleblower protections. 16 agents arrived at the home of Dennis Nathan Kane, a former FBI contractor, on the morning of November 19th and raided his Union Bridge, Maryland home. There was a court order signed on November 15th by a magistrate judge named Stephanie Gallagher in the U.S. District Court for Baltimore. They charged that Kane possessed stolen federal property and demanded entry to his private residence. Once they got in there, they gave him the documents because he was scared, so he handed over the documents, and they kept searching his house for 6 more hours after that.
Where the hell could that even lead?
I don't know. And he's supposed to be protected under the Whistleblower Act.
Yeah, it's one thing if he took whatever he had to the New York Times or to True Pundit. It's another thing that he's going to these departments directly and handing it over to Congress.
At the time, the Attorney General was Jeff Sessions. the IG is supposed to share such information with the attorney general when he gets it. So the last quote is, I can't believe the Bureau informed the federal magistrate who approved this search warrant that they wanted to search the home of an FBI whistleblower to seize information that he confidentially disclosed to the IG and Congress.
Oh, I don't even know where to go with that.
I mean, what could it be? Could it be that the FBI is doing its own investigation and there's some shenanigans going on with Horowitz?
I don't know.
I mean, what could...
I don't know. I mean, it could be Mueller and company covering up for their involvement. It could be them trying to. I mean, this could be bad. I have no. I don't know.
Like, I think that the whistleblower is going public with his name because he's scared and he wants sunlight. But I don't know what would cause 16 FBI agents under a Whitaker Justice Department to storm a whistleblower's home and take things that have already been provided.
That's a great point. It's a great question, and that's the first question I would like to hear answered. That's all I can say on that one, because this is pretty new to me. I see it popping up now, but that's as much as I know.
I mean, I don't know what the hell this could be. I mean, I really am just puzzled. After the raid and having received my name and phone number from Mr. Kane as his lawyer, an FBI agent actually called my client directly to discuss his seized electronics. Knowingly bypassing the lawyer of a represented client is serious misconduct. It was almost like this was like the Justice Department and the Inspector General both declined comment.
And we had a testimony from other FBI plants, other FBI plants for that was monitoring Uranium One. People who were witnessing bribery and kickbacks and all that stuff. You know, this is stuff that's been on the record now. We have another whistleblower over here. They're going through the proper channels, it sounds like. I mean, if you're going to the Inspector General and you're going to Congress, that is a lot better than, you know.
WikiLeaks.
Yeah, it's a lot better than WikiLeaks. And where the hell is all this going? I feel... especially on the uranium one side of things, this is just really, really weird. It seems like there's something going on every couple of months, and then there's nothing. It disappears. Well, and then this.
Did Sessions not do anything about this? Whitaker took over and said, that's it. We're going after these people. And this was kind of like buried in the dustbin of history, and they wanted it, and they weren't being provided it by the IG.
But going after these people sound like – this sounds like an effort to cover up and silence. Well, it doesn't sound like an effort to bring to the surface. So that would beg the question of what the intention of Sessions and Whitaker is.
Why do you think it sounds like an intention to silence? Because of the nature of the raid?
Well, the nature of the raid, and the timing of the raid. You're talking about a person who has been cooperative and has gone through supposedly the proper channels. Why then treat him like he's John Gotti afterwards?
Maybe he had other motives and wasn't being transparent.
You know what? You're right. I have no clue. This is all very new to me anyhow.
But the way you took it is the way that I took it too, but it just can't be. It's too easy. Just too easy. It doesn't make sense to send 16. Obviously, this is going to be very visible. You know, if they were trying to hide this, they'd do it differently. I feel like sending 16 agents to somebody's house is a little bit of a overkill if they're trying to cover something up.
Yeah, it is overkill.
Especially right after they announced that they're seriously looking into the Clinton Foundation.
Is there any? Oh, yeah, and they're talking to other whistleblowers.
Yeah.
So then my question here is this guy, what's his name again?
His name is Dennis Nathan Kane.
Anything that I think that's somebody that needs to be looked into then.
Well, yeah, I'm doing that right now as we speak, actually. I'm just going to go through 2015 to 2017. I got nothing.
All right. Well, okay. There's some new news I'm going to have to look into now.
Yeah. We're going to have to definitely dig into him and see what he's all about. But yeah, that's I mean, that's really interesting given the climate we're in right now. And then let's talk about there's so many more things. There's all the things.
Well, let's do a lightning round then.
Well, yeah, I mean, we could do, but we still have a half hour, so we're good. With 25 minutes. What about this whole thing with Assange? Can we talk about how they lied about Manafort meeting with him and then didn't talk at all about how Adam Waldman was working with Assange for months and communicating with members of Congress as he did it?
Mm-hmm.
And then how James Comey was even working with Assange and the FBI and turned down a deal to get real information from Assange so they could continue to cover things up and let Vault 7 be leaked out to the world.
Yeah.
And how we don't know where he is, if he's even still there, and nobody can say. They wouldn't let his attorneys in to talk to him, which is like super duper against the law.
Well, this is another big reason why, and I put this out in a small clip today too from the other night. Another big reason why I want to see declassification as quickly as possible, because you want to talk about the only real defense that people have is the protection of sources and methods. You know, don't expose them. But you know, you just brought up the Senate Intelligence Committee and James Comey. You want to talk about protecting sources and methods? They bargained. They used vaults. They said, go ahead, release Vault 7. That's fine. We need to keep this Russian narrative in place.
I mean, really?
I mean, so I don't care. And ultimately, it all comes down to this. The big thing here is that if we have 8 years of President Trump, the one of the greatest things he can do is help destroy the media and also to keep a Senate majority and flush out the judicial branch with some constitutionalists that'll give us some legal cover fire for us to try to do something in turning culture around on a civilian level. That's all we need. We need some time. We need to buy some time. But other than that, everything that is being done right now, prior to some kind of a big bomb dropped on the entire system, and that goes down to the central banking, that goes down to the people we have in Congress, that goes down to dual citizenship, that goes down to just everything, Chevron deference, how these departments are able to levy regulations and put them onto people without having any kind of they're not representatives we elected. You know, there's so many things that need to be clipped and destroyed, and departments that need to be shut down and trimmed, and there is just so much that needs to be done that if we don't get them done, no matter what happens over the next 2 to 8 years, we'll be undone in time. And this is what I'm saying. Just drop the bomb. If all this stuff is being used against the will of Western civilization and the spirit of democracy that everybody always talks about, if all of these shadowy organizations are able to band together and they're able to do whatever they want to make sure the most shadow friendly candidates are in office, the most shadow friendly financial assets are in positions of power and regulatory positions. If this is what we're dealing with here, then that institution, those networks do not deserve to exist, because you can say, okay, well, we got all the bad apples out of the NSA. We got all the bad apples out of this one and that one. And then what happens in 15 years when all the bad apples are back? This is what is endemic in the human species. It's got to be a clean sweep. And then we've got to shutter the doors and burn down the warehouse.
Yeah, it needs to go back to small, limited government and out of this massive monstrosity it's become.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's hopeless.
Hopeless. Otherwise hopeless. And I'm just talking about small, shackled, completely limited federal government. The state governments can become as monstrous and as dysfunctional as they'd like, because they're only going to pay their own price. They're going to pay their price, like here in New York, where we have 100,000 people leaving the state every year looking for greener pastures, and in states with no state income
so
tax.
So they can take the policies that made New York the way they are and keep them that way and change the place that they move to.
That could be. That could be. And then, you know, eventually everybody learns the hard way. I mean, either way, this fatalistic kind of thinking and voting practices of individuals, that's going to come and bite them in the ass anyway. But for in the meantime, it would be good for people to know that there is the opportunity to get up and leave and find someplace else. You can't do that if what we have right now is the case, because what we have right now has not only eliminated the idea that states are sovereign entities, but it's also eliminated the idea that nations are sovereign entities. We're not even talking about the U.S. anymore. This has brought the nations of the world under one kind of, you know, this regulatory group of people that nobody voted for.
No, and it exists right now for anyone saying, oh, we can't get there. It exists right now.
Yep.
They're at the G20 summit right now.
Yep. And those are just the figureheads.
I know.
Those are just
those aren't the power brokers.
Yeah, those are the people at the G20. Those are the people who come and go, and everybody is able to enjoy their tradition of voting and choosing and all that stuff. The people behind them, you know, the 30, 40-year bureaucrats and the bankers and all that stuff, they're always going to be there. Nobody has a chance. Well, why do you think Ron Paul never had a chance? Ron Paul never had a chance. He was kept in the broom closet. Anytime somebody coming out of the polls, an exit poll interview somewhere, is talking nicely about Ron Paul, a veteran, anything like that, what do they do? Oh shoot, our connection from the satellite gave out.
I know, you know? Because I lived that for 8 years.
Unbelievable.
12 actually. Well, 10. 10 years of that. Being called all kinds of names, crazy, militia member, you know, just because I like the Constitution.
Militia member.
Yeah, no, serious. One of my very, very dear friends was on the Southern Poverty Law Center's terrorism list.
Southern Poverty Law Center should be on the terrorism list.
I know. Did you hear James Comey?
Well, I've been reading James Comey.
I know. I don't want to hear his voice anymore either. Unless it's that song that they made with Hillary Clinton. What difference at this point does it make?
I never heard that
one. Oh my gosh, no.
Never heard it.
They did like an auto-tune version of James Comey and Hillary Clinton. And James Comey's like reading out all of her charges. 52 email chains. Like, and it's Hillary Clinton's on the other side. And she's saying, what difference at this point does it make? It's really actually catchy.
I'm going to have to listen to it afterwards.
I'm going to send it to you.
As far as James Comey, I can't stand the gangly bastard anymore. So I can't stand him.
God, I know. And so his big thing was transparency, Frank. Transparency for the people. Right?
Well, that's because he knows that most of the people are stupid.
It's because he thinks that most of them are. And he also wants to be able to avoid questions. And he also wants to be able to broadcast what he's saying to all of his criminal counterparts, allegedly.
Yep. Yeah. Just say, hey, guys, this is the alibi. Make sure this gets around.
Which is exactly why Feinstein sneezed out Glenn Simpson's testimony.
Yep.
So he says, I'm not going to do this under subpoena unless it's an open hearing where I can be honest and transparent with the American people who deserve it. So Grassley said, you know what? What we're going to do is release the transcript of your closed hearing testimony immediately when you're done. And what does he do? He goes to court and he files an injunction so that he will like basically fight the subpoena, that he doesn't want to go and he's not going to, you know, agree to it. And he's going to try and fight the subpoena in court.
Yeah, he's going to try to fight the subpoena, anything just to get him past the inauguration day.
Yep.
2019. New House majority is in place. He is a gangly little. I can't. I just want to.
You know, I get so excited when you get mad because it's funny as hell. Like, I really do.
I heard.
Your yell.
Many people tell me they love when I get mad, and I don't know why. And I understand because I laugh my ass. I love when my father gets mad. I said there's nothing funnier when a Valbiro becomes frustrated. There's nothing funnier. You know, so I understand. It just sucks when you're the one.
Yeah, but you like do this muted yell like that.
Because I'm going to say something horrible. And I know that every time that we go live, Tracy, we sell out Yankee Stadium and then some. I know there's a lot of people listening. And there's nothing better. There's nothing better than getting your frustrations out. And to look at a guy who believes that he is smarter than anybody in the room, and he has the smug look, and he's a Boy Scout. He's just an Eagle Scout, and his hair is always perfectly he looks like he's always fresh out of the shower, and he probably smells like Old Spice. You know, I can't stand him. And he's sitting there with this act. Well, it's about transparency. And I love when he was talking that veiled threat to Whitaker.
Oh, yes.
He's not the sharpest tool in the shed, but he wouldn't want to go down in American history in the wrong way, would he? What are you talking about, you creep? You were on television for 13 minutes listing a laundry list of crimes that were committed by Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. And then you walk away from it? You want to talk about going down in history?
What difference at this point does it make?
Oh God! And they don't want transparency. Transparency.
So he files a motion to quash this subpoena, Frank, and it's assigned to Judge Timothy Kelly. And then, Judge Timothy Kelly was. Oh, I did my little research on him. He was he was appointed by Trump. He was appointed to the District Court for the District of Columbia in September of 2017. He began his career at Arnold and Porter. He joined the U.S. Attorney's Office for the District of Columbia as an assistant United States attorney, where he prosecuted a variety of offenses, including serious violent crimes, drug trafficking, and white-collar offenses. That was 2003. From 2013 to 2017, he served as chief counsel for national security and senior crime counsel to U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley, as well as staff director on the Senate Caucus on International Narcotics Control.
And how quickly is he going to make a ruling on this? Because I want him just thrown into the I just want him to just thrown onto into this this hearing. I want it done now.
Well, it was reassigned from him to another judge Trevor McFadden. And Trevor McFadden's a little more interesting. Trevor McFadden served as an assistant United States attorney in the District of Columbia and as counsel to the United States Deputy Attorney General. Before becoming a judge, McFadden served as a Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Criminal Division of the Department of Justice. Now, he was also appointed by Trump on October 31st, 2017. He's 40 years old. He's ruling. He's got a hearing today on it. He already scheduled it. It's already on the calendar.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's a good reassignment at the behest of like somebody, you know, I think that judge is better, you know, if it's a Comey move or if it's not a Comey move or if it was just a calendaring issue.
I don't know. I don't know. But they're good. This is why, you know, there's a lot of talk of military tribunals out there. And I'll tell you one thing. I every day more and more I believe that it is going to be impossible to clean up this mess through civilian courts. I just think it's more and more. There's just too many. They dog the system in too many weaselly little ways. These are all motions, and these are all ways and methods of that might have been great useful tools for a little bit more of a morally sound society at one point. We've always had our weasels. We've always had our criminals. We've always had people. Wherever there's government and wherever there is this this authority, this civilian authority that comes around is able to do things like levy taxes and is able to enforce new laws and is able to give a subsidy to this one or is able to, you know, pick winners and losers economically. There is always corruption. I mean, right there, that's corrupt. A subsidy is corrupt, if you ask me. Right there, you're picking winners and losers. So I understand that there was a time when all of these rules and all of these methods and these motions that could be filed and no. But it's just that there is nothing but snakes now.
Yeah.
There's nothing but snakes, and they're using the remnants of what was once a really great idea to their advantage. I believe every time I hear somebody say the military tribunals are coming, I get giddy now. You know, I as a libertarian leaning constitutional conservative type, I get really I don't like the idea of border walls, and I don't like the idea of, you know, military tribunals and you know, these really these I don't know, things like that often make me feel very uncomfortable and I shy away from it. But you know what, this is just what are we living in? Was this a republic? Is this really a republic? So I don't even know anymore.
I don't know anymore either, and it gets sad.
No, not sad, angry from time to time, because once you walk away from the computer, life is, there is no Jim Comey in my living room. Thankfully, there's no Jim Comey hiding behind my Christmas tree right now. It's just me, my cat, Lauren, my friends and family, you know, you on Friday. That's what life is. We have to continue to remind ourselves that we're playing a game of pendulum swinging here. And it's always fun when we're on the upswing, but always comes back to, and that is the game. We got to get off the ride here. Because it's nonsense. What we needed is a little bit of heavy-handedness, and we just got to say, get these mother out, get them out.
That was good. That was good.
I tried. I had.
That was really good, actually.
I was almost. I almost. I can't.
You have done so well, Frank. You really have done so well.
Yeah.
Think about it honestly.
On this show, yes.
Yes. And it's not like you've really had to try that hard. I mean, there's moments like that. But for the most part, you've done really, really, really well. You should be proud of yourself.
I can do it. Like, I can be invited on to AM, FM radio and handle myself nicely. I can do it.
I know, but you can.
You know, it's just I like being able to stretch my legs. That's why.
You did good.
I'm going to talk about Rudolph tonight.
Oh, Rudolph. Yes, the culturally appropriated reindeer boy.
Yeah, that's so stupid.
Before we do that, I want to say I have a special surprise that's coming out. It's a Democrat-hated, I guess, politically incorrect in the Me Too era Christmas duet that I'm preparing.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting. I can't wait.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're going to be singing with somebody?
I am.
But you can't say anything else?
Not really yet, but I will soon. It's going to be funny. It's going to be good.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
And then I want to talk about, for the last few minutes before, I would love to touch on Rudolph for a second, but I definitely want to talk about what Laura Loomer did yesterday.
Okay, go ahead.
What do you think about what she did yesterday at Twitter?
I am not one to chain myself to things to get a point across. I know everybody, that some people said she's very brave for doing what she did. I honestly just don't care. It kind of looks a little nutty to me. It looks a little nutty to me to do this stuff. What I will say is this. I would give her a lot more props for this maybe if she wasn't, you know, one of those who went out to the Shakespeare in the Park thing with Julius Caesar and made a scene over there too. If she didn't have a history of, you know, stunts like this, then maybe I'd be like, you know what, this is a free speech, a big free speech issue and blah blah blah, and you know, good on her for feeling passionate about something and willing to, I don't know, but it's not something I would ever do.
It's crazy that you like. It's so funny the difference of opinion that people have. Let me be. I said this yesterday. I'm gonna go on the like. I do not agree with appreciate the wrong word. I don't agree with a lot of what Laura Loomer does and says. I don't agree with a lot of the way she handles certain things, like you just said, right? However, there is a place for it, and it's necessary. And so I feel like there is a certain – like one of the things I'm going to talk about when I do this presentation at American Priority next week is all the four or five different types of journalism I think are prevalent right now and what their strengths are. And I think that the type of journalism that she does is necessary in our society because it's like almost like a morph of activism and journalism together. And it's there for its shock value and to prove a point via shock value. And I supported what she did yesterday. Not that I would ever do so. I don't have the guts to do something like that. And I just could never do it. I just couldn't do it. So the fact that she did it to me was like, wow. Like, you know, regardless of what the outcome was, she started that conversation and it didn't end. Whether it was people like me and you discussing why you think it's nutty versus why I think she was well within every bit of her rights to do something like that. And why I think that, you know, people should just let her be her and stop worrying about what other people say. Like, I don't think that that's where you're coming from. Like, no.
I'm not denying it's her right to do it. It's just, I know that she uses this is one of her methods of getting a point across. If this was one thing where she's like, you know what, because Twitter, I know, yeah, it's a private company, get over it, you had it taken away. I know that, I understand that point too. But in the great respect, I've had this conversation many times. Google is a lot more than just a private company. When you can manipulate search engine results and change the way a certain demographic of people think and vote with an effective efficiency rating of over 60-90%. I mean, that is the ability to end the democratic world. That's a lot more than being a company that put out a gaming system that everybody likes and or something like that. I don't know.
You're right. Google's dangerous.
So, you know, but Twitter is right up there too. Twitter and Facebook. Facebook is on the decline now. But these are the primary ways that people communicate, the primary ways that people debate, and are able to put a checking mechanism on the way that narratives are formed and perpetuated throughout society. It's very important, and that's why it's just as dangerous when these things fall under authoritarian. Regulation by the companies themselves. There is no balance to the way that they are censoring conservatives and liberals and different types of opinion. It is very, very biased, despite what the hell they say in their statements and their sworn testimonies and all that stuff. So I know where she's coming from, and she has every right in the world to do what she does. Like I said, I wouldn't do it. It looks a little nutty. And she's done it in the past for something that doesn't really need it. There's something inherently crazy already that somebody would go and do Shakespeare in the Park, and they would dress up Julius Caesar as Donald Trump and stab him to death every night on stage. You don't need somebody to show up and scream like an idiot to show the world how crazy that is. We were already talking about it.
She does things for attention. She wants attention. That's fine. Like, yeah, no, like I said, I don't agree with everything that she's done. And I'll be honest with you. I don't think she likes me very much. I really don't. So it's not like there's any love lost here. I really think that she doesn't like me. I have several reasons to feel that way. But it doesn't matter. Like, to me, chaining herself to the door of Twitter headquarters, for everything inside of me, like nothing about it made me say that's crazy. Nothing. I don't know why so many people reacted that way. And I was like kind of scratching my head like, why? Why is it crazy? Why is it nutty?
It's about the message.
And somebody said like, you know, she makes us all look bad. And I'm like, well, only if you let her. I mean, she doesn't make me look bad. She made me look a lot worse when she was anti-Islamophobic on her Twitter page. That's when she made me look bad. Chaining herself to a door doesn't make me look bad. It's somebody standing up for basically what they're doing. And she was the number two trending topic in the entire world last night on Twitter. Well,
in her defense, though, too. In her defense, though, too, you say some people say, well, she makes us look bad. Well, think about what that even implies, us versus them. Mm-hmm. The fact that us, when if she's out there getting the fact that she's getting taken down or people like her, because there's been another big purge on Twitter.
Yep.
The fact that there isn't us versus them on the basis of free speech is beyond me. It's just like when we were talking about declassification and the way that the intelligence community has the international intelligence community has, you know, seemingly banded together to try to dictate what is acceptable for countries, what is acceptable for the world outside of the bounds of what people, the same people whose livelihoods are what fuels these organizations. I mean, our tax money, you know, us waking up every day in the morning to go off to work, or some people every night to go off to work and do the graveyard shift. The tax money that comes from all that is what gives these crooks their ability to operate and stay in power for decades and generations. For anybody out there to say that what we're looking at right now in the executive branch and elsewhere is a Republican versus a Democrat or a conservative versus a progressive thing here is outrageous. This is something we should all say, all right, hey, we need to be able to speak freely. And this is not right. I don't like the other people on the other side, and I want to beat them in debate, and I want to expose them for the intellectual, dolts that they are. That's one thing. And you want to say, hey, well, I also want to be able to do things with government that the other side doesn't want to do. But I don't want to have this unaccountable intelligence wing there ready to snipe down anybody who gets in their way. I mean, this should be about the people, right? Everybody always talks about the people. So the craziness is that there is even an us versus them on situations like Twitter and free speech, or like what's going on with this Russia thing. People want to see Donald Trump gone so bad. They don't care what they give credence to in order to get rid of him.
No.
That's the problem here. They can't just go out there and win an election. They are siding with a group of people that are obviously so corrupt that they just feel like, hey, you know what? This is worth it. If we can get him.
It's so sad to me that they don't see it. Like, every time someone's like, oh, he colluded with Russia, I'm like, oh my gosh, how many? I hate the whataboutism. I hate the what about Hillary Clinton? I hate that, because there is no place to start what about from. There is literally no comparison between the two. Literally.
Well, it's not so much the whataboutism to say, okay, well, this happened, but what about this? It's a little bit deeper than that. You go on The View, okay? The View, one of the crazy cheesecake eating hags from The View 2 days ago was sitting there, and she was somebody had said, it might have been Meghan McCain that brought up the situation at the border, how, you know, there's border patrol, crowd dispersal, non-lethal methods that have been employed by everybody, you know, and the Obama administration, under the Obama administration, the border patrol had deployed tear gas over 500 times, you know, so.
Well, Alyssa Milano finally came out and said, I don't care who does it, it's bad anytime it's done. So, you know. Right.
But this is the thing. They say – this one woman said – oh, actually, what the hell is her name? It's right here. Okay. It doesn't matter. Either way, they said, I don't care what Obama did. I care about what Trump is doing right now. Invalid. Number one, this is the reason why. For you not caring – when Obama did it, it's this, if the same action was not condemnable the last 20 years, then what you're saying right now is the only thing that is different is you don't personally like the administration. That is just invalid. So I'm actually supporting Barack Obama by saying Barack Obama, George W. Bush, Bill Clinton. These are the methods that are employed by our border patrol for years. It is not a valid argument now to say Donald Trump is a horrible person. What's going on in the border is just awful. But it's what's been always been going on. Yeah, but it doesn't matter now. But it doesn't matter then. It matters now. It's completely devoid of an argument. There's no argument there. So I don't disagree with anybody in the Obama administration using non-lethal crowd dispersal techniques to keep hordes of people from pouring into our borders, even though it hasn't worked that well. You know, this is just a little bit more attention has been garnered by this latest horde, but that's it.
We didn't even really get to talk about that, and that was a big thing that I'm still looking into.
Everything about that is orchestrated. I mean,
oh my gosh, yes.
From down there, obviously, Central and South American governments and organizations, these people without borders and all that, we watch the organization. We watch them putting these people on the path. What they really, really did was just they lit the candle, and then like moths to a flame, they just attracted thousands and thousands more. And they lied about how easy it would be to get over the border, because all that mattered was that they got to the border and that there would be cameras waiting there and that hopefully somebody would get hurt. That's it. And now some of them are leaving because they see that it's not that easy. MSNBC, CNN, they've been forced to broadcast multiple times that it is like 50-1 men, single men there, that 90% of the people who say that they're seeking asylum are not eligible for asylum.
No.
All they want is a job.
No, I had a debate with someone who I later found out was my college sorority sister about this. I didn't know that that's who it was at the time. She just kind of snuck up on me there, but we were having a debate about it. I'm like, it's not, they're coming here under the guise of asylum, lying from the very beginning. Let them come through immigration. Let them come legally through immigration. And these people, not for nothing, the majority of them were sold a bill of goods that the people that sold it to them knew wouldn't come to fruition.
Absolutely.
They knew it.
They don't care.
That's why they're self-deporting right now.
Hey, they're self-deporting, but you think about the reason why. Think about how easy, how low risk, high reward this was for the organizers of that horde. They put people together that were low income. They were poor. They were illiterate in many cases. Many of them are sick. There's hundreds of criminals in there who are looking for an easy out, and they're being sent from these socialist failed states in Central and South America, who would love to see some of their dependents leave. You know, at the very least, they get to bleed the radiator a little bit, reduce some of the pressure of having their government, having to support thousands of extra people. Now they can send them up the chain. If some of them take asylum in Mexico, it's Mexico's problem. If not, they get to cause trouble for this great Satan in the White House right now by getting people right there at the border. And they really don't care about the health and the welfare of their citizens, because they've already.
It's crazy that you're saying that, because I'm going there and then we're going to wrap because we're 10 minutes over. Amazing. You're right. They don't care about the health and welfare. Because they're actually having to put up signs saying no spitting. There are people testing positive for tuberculosis, for all kinds of – for chickenpox, an outbreak that's going around the camp there. You know, I'm almost of the mind to say, like, to the United States, do me a favor. Please ship some meds into Tijuana so these people can get healed before they leave. Like, at least just heal them and then kick them the hell out with a boot. Like, we can do that. We can do that, right? I mean –
yeah, well, you know, I would be totally down with that. I would say that let's give all of the medication and the medical treatment we can to all the people on the side of the Tijuana, in Tijuana, and anywhere else that they are congregating. But all of those costs should be deducted from the financial aid that is sent out to the countries from which they came.
Fine, fine, but heal them.
Yeah, heal them and then take away everything. And
yeah.
I want all of our foreign aid back. I want the borders closed. I hate to say it.
And then another thing, how are these people getting on planes and flying back to where they came from, huh? I thought that they had to walk all that way with dirty sandals and diapers.
Yeah.
You know, but they're shipping them out on planes now.
No, it's sick. It's sick to watch because once again, even in debating it, there's traps set up built into the debate of what the news is and what the truth about these people are, or what the truth is, I should say. And the trap built into even the debate is in, you know, criticizing the poor. No. No, the poor are being – once again, they're being used by everybody. I mean, you know, there's a little bit more about, you know, Stormy Daniels. Everybody has an opinion about Stormy Daniels. She's being used. She thought that she had a great deal coming her way, and now she's being used. All the other women that were trotted out there to try to take Trump down in October 2016, they were used. They're all flushable wipes. These are 5,000 flushable – that's it. 5,000 flushable wipes are on the other side of the border in Tijuana right now. Is that because I think that they're less than human? No, but that is how they are regarded by the people who sent them there.
Yeah, no, exactly. And yes. Mm-hmm. Bingo bango. Yep. By the way, what?
Okay, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. It was going to be good, whatever you were just going to say.
No, nah.
You know what ends the show? The fact that they limited the advertising on my compilation video of footage of the immigrants because it's non-advertiser friendly.
Yeah.
So that's it for this week of the Dark Delight podcast with
Declassify Now
and Beans.
Frank. Declassify Frank now.
Declassify Frank. Oh, I said Clapsify. Classify.
Yeah.
Whatevs. Declassify Frank and Beans. You guys can listen to the show on iTunes, TuneIn, Google Play, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com. Next week, Frank's going to give you a quick half-hour show because I will be down again in Washington, D.C. at the American Priority Conference. If you're in the area, please buy a ticket and come by. It is going to be really, really fun, actually. There's a lot of stuff. I'm on a panel. It's going to be great.
You know, I might even do the full hour because next Friday I won't be doing, quite frankly, because we have a gig. My band has a gig in Brooklyn, so ooh, I might just do the full length. I don't know.
Cool. The show is yours.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, you know.
Do what you wish.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I had a great time today, Tracy. Thank you for having me once again.
Oh, of course. The pleasure's all mine. Great action-packed, information-packed show today. Excited to get it out there.
Good.
Talk to you soon.
This is a Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill quick fix on Radio Influence.
Again, this is not a mass shooting, i.e. some weirdo just comes in off the street like we've seen in nightclubs, malls, movie theaters, restaurants. Some weirdo just comes in off the street and randomly starts shooting people. This was a verbal altercation at an urban mall, which went to a physical altercation, which went to everybody pulling out guns. You got guns, I got guns. What up, homie? What you want to do? So that part of that is a little different. And let's just say, for argument's sake, that EJ Bradford was indeed, oh, by the way, his parents say he had a or someone has said, I don't know if it was his parents, that he had a concealed carry permit. So let's just say he is actually trying to prevent people from being shot and he pulled out his gun. Now, all right, great. Here's the thing. Police hear boom, 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 boom. Then they hear, ah, oh shit, oh shit, they're shooting. Police are a few feet away. Boom, they run to where the shots are coming from, which police are trained to do, eliminate the threat. They see EJ Bradford there with a gun. Ask yourself this, when in those few seconds do they have time to say, after just hearing shots and seeing people running and two people shot, when do they have time to say, hey, sir, what's your name? Oh, you went to basic training? Oh, that's cool. Oh, you got a concealed carry permit? Oh, that's cool. oh, and you're black. Oh, that's cool. We won't shoot you. Because clearly you're not the shooter. It doesn't work that way.
Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.